Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? I hope everybody is doing well out there. I know I am. It is a beautiful day outside right now. We are going to see temps in the high 60s. The sun is out and shining. I'm loving it, folks. And I all know that we, of course, are in quarantine. And we are all doing our best to stay inside, hopefully, right? With the exception of maybe getting outside and doing some exercise and doing that safely. But thank you so much for allowing us to be a part of your Wednesday afternoon. How about that? It's already Wednesday. I feel like this week is flying by. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. But it is May 20th, 2020. Happy hump day to you all. You know, I'm really excited about today's Current Sports because I have a special guest who is about to come on this show and absolutely rock it out. My man, Steve Fenimore, who, if you follow Steve on social media, I mean, he is just a joy because, one, he's always positive, and two, he is probably the biggest basketball junkie I've ever met in my life. And you guys know, I love hoops. So anybody who loves hoops, I instantly vibe with. And, you know, I remember when I met Steve, actually. Steve Fenimore is who I'm talking about, the great Steve Fenimore. When I met Steve Fenimore, I was an intern at Channel 6 News during my collegiate years, trying to get that broadcasting degree so that I could do this professionally. And I was an intern, and, you know, I was sent out to East Lansing High School to interview Steve and to put together like a preview of the East Lansing boys basketball season. And I'll never forget, I met Steve, and he was just so cool. That New York accent, you know, he dapped me up, and we talked for, you know, other than me getting my shots, after I got done getting my shots and my interviews, and we talked for about 10 minutes after just about basketball and his love for it and where he's from. Just an incredibly personable guy, down to earth and filled with a ton of knowledge. Not just doing the game of basketball, but the game of life as well. And he's always reading a new book and spreading that knowledge to the public. I love the dude. And, you know, he has impacted so many young lives as well, being former head coach at East Lansing High School of the boys basketball program there. And then, of course, also at Lansing Sexton High School. And, you know, I always say, man, I give so much props to coaches out there who coach our youth and also teachers who educate our youth, obviously, right? Because they are the ones in charge of molding the minds of the generations that come after us. And, you know, Steve has certainly had his imprint on the youth here in the greater Lansing area. So on today's show, Steve is going to chat with us, and we are going to talk about The Last Dance. I've been dying to get Steve on the show to get his thoughts on The Last Dance, Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls documentary, which wrapped up just a few days ago on Sunday night. We talk all things The Last Dance with Steve Fenimore. And if you would like to be a part of the show, again, just pick up that phone and text 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News. You can comment right there, and I'll get to your comments. And you can also tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. So without further ado, we now welcome to the show Steve Fenimore.
Al Martin, everything is great, man. It's awesome to be here on your show today. I really appreciate it.
You know, you hit me up, and I had already had you in mind to get you on the show to talk about The Last Dance, but you heard me on Monday kind of recapping those final two episodes and trying to put the entire docuseries in perspective. And, you know, you hit me up saying, Al, man, I want to come on and talk about this. And I was like, Steve, I already had you in mind. So I want to get to the docuseries, Steve, because I believe it is one of the greatest sports documentaries of all time. We've never seen Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player of all time, in my opinion. We've never seen him in that kind of light. First off, I just want to get your overall takeaways from what you saw these last 5 weeks.
Well, Al, I'll be quite honest. There were a few things that, you know, I kind of forgot what had transpired during those years, those six championship years. And you know, 10 episodes, to me, at first I thought it's going to be too much, you know, overload, redundant, you know, same thing over and over and over. But with each episode, I learned something new. And it rekindled my you know, flame. I just remember, I said, oh, wow. Like, for instance, Dennis Rodman going to wrestle, you know, with Hulk Hogan and those guys. I remember it happened, but I kind of forgot about it. So it was those things that really brought back those great memories. And I'll tell you what, Al, I know we make proclamations, we make predictions, we give our opinion. I honestly think that the Chicago Bulls would have won two more championships when Michael went to play baseball.
Wow. And, you know, that's the thing, too, Steve. I mean, when you really dive into, you know, the greatness of Michael Jordan and the greatness of that dynasty, what adds to that lore is that there is so much mystique, right? You know, what if Michael Jordan didn't go and play baseball? What if Jerry Krause was able to keep the band together and swallow his pride and keep this team intact? What could have happened? You know, a lot of people believe maybe 8 or 9 championships, right?
Yep. No question. Especially, you know, 8 or 9, because that last year that everyone was talking about after they won in 98, we heard everyone's, you know, opinion about it. We've been reading about it. If they don't break that team up, the following season it was a lockout, so they only played 50 games. There's no telling what would have happened. You know, I just read yesterday someone said Scottie Pippen would have never signed a 1-year deal to come back. But I honestly think, Al, all those guys were competitors, even Dennis Rodman. I think if it would have been thrown out to them, the carrot dangling in front of them, hey, let's come back for one more year, the really last dance, you know, and let's see if we can win 7 in a row, or 7 total.
Before I dive into those final two episodes, Steve, I got to ask you, man, leading up to that final weekend, what had been your favorite moment of the docuseries so far?
You know, there were a few. I was actually talking to some friends last night on a Zoom meeting, and we were kind of discussing the same thing. I tell you what, Al, the one thing that really sticks out in my mind, and I'll never forget it, and I used to tell this story all the time to young basketball players. Al, I forget which episode it was, but when they showed the NBA Finals against the Phoenix Suns in 1993 with Charles Barkley's team and Kevin Johnson and Danny Ainge and those guys, I remember Chicago had the ball at the end, the game 6. And they inbounded. I think they were down 1 or down 2. And Michael came down the floor with the ball. Everyone touched the ball. B.J. Armstrong got it first. He threw it back to Jordan. MJ drove the ball up. He got past his defender. Threw it to Pippen. Pippen threw it to Horace Grant. Horace Grant threw it to a wide open now I'm drawing a blank now, John Paxson, and John Paxson made the outside shot. So, Al, that one episode when they showed that clip was probably the my favorite clip out of all the 10 episodes.
I do remember that, and you know, a lot of people believe that that team right there may have been Michael Jordan's best team. I remember B.J. Armstrong coming on and talking about during that moment that's when Michael was more than a basketball player to him. He was a winner. He was finding out multiple ways to win, and that was a truly transcendent moment in his career, right?
Al, in that series, in that six-game series, and by the way, I don't want to insult your listeners, but I hope everyone realizes that Michael never had a game seven in the NBA Finals. Everything went six or less. In that series, Al, Michael averaged 41 points a game. 41 points per game in six games. Think about that. I think it's only been done twice in the history of the league. So, you know, when these people see LeBron and Kawhi Leonard and these guys in the finals nowadays, you know, and they say, oh, wow, he's averaging 26 points a game. Michael averaged 41 a game in 93 against the Suns.
In a much more physical era, right?
I tell you what, you saw how many times Michael got fouled, and we remember he would get knocked down to the ground against the Pistons. He would get up, and I'll tell you what, look up his free throw percentage because he used to make those free throws. A lot of guys, you know, I don't want to say nowadays, but when guys get hit, you know, you played ball. If you played and you got fouled, you know, you weren't feeling great walking to that line. So it took some courage and some toughness to make those free throws.
Okay, Steve, I got to go here next, man, because as you know, I am a diehard Detroit Pistons fan. Right? You already know where I'm going next, man. And I'm looking to my right now. You know, I'm doing my show from the crib during quarantine right now. And I have a Detroit Bad Boys, like, flag logo right in my living room, bro. And we all know about the battles that Jordan and the Detroit Pistons had back in the late 80s. And once he overcame the Pistons, I mean, he was just he rolled in the 90s, as we know. But another team that certainly felt Jordan's wrath were your New York Knicks. I mean, you're from New York. And I got to know, Steve, what were your thoughts when Jordan was tearing up the Eastern Conference, tearing up the league, for that matter, back during that time? What were your thoughts and feelings toward MJ in that moment?
Well, I'll tell you, I've always been a student of the game. I've always respected great players, you know, guys who played hard, played with effort, things of that nature. The competitive spirit in me, you know, was always there. When the Knicks and the Bulls would tangle in the early 90s, you know, New York City was so alive. And I'm sure other cities were, too, during the playoffs and the championship series. In 93, I think it was, when Chicago beat them, and I remember after the final game at Madison Square Garden, I just remember John Starks, Patrick Ewing, the Knicks were shaking hands with the Bulls on the court. And I always talk about this now, especially after that whole walk-off by Isaiah, Lane Beer, and those guys not shaking hands. Oh, well, the Celtics didn't shake hands, blah, blah, blah. To me, when the Knicks shook hands, Xavier McDaniel, Anthony Mason, I thought that was so cool. The Bulls broke our hearts three times in the playoffs in three different years. And in 92, the year before, we took them to seven games. But it was tough on me, Al. But you know what? I always respected them. I loved the series. And it was just great basketball each year.
It definitely was. And those were just such intense battles back in the day. You know, and I'll never forget, you know, when I talk to New York Knicks fans from time to time, Steve, they always bring up, you know, because you got to just hold on to those moments when you do – you know, edge Jordan just a little bit, even though you didn't win the series and he still went on to win those rings. They always bring up, I hear often, the John Starks dunk.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. and that was so sweet. He drove right and he dunked it with his left. I think he dunked it on Grant, and I think Jordan was there, like, checking it out, thinking about going up. But I'll tell you what. Mm-hmm. With the connection with the Knicks in 1984, in Michael's rookie season, I was at his first regular season game at the Garden, and I was also at his first exhibition game at the Garden. Al, for a lot of the young fans out there, they know about the NBA preseason, exhibition season, before the season. They used to have double headers at Madison Square Garden. 6 o'clock would be the first game, and then at 8 o'clock, the Knicks would play an opponent. So you got to see four teams in one night for one price in the exhibition. They don't do that anymore. We saw Jordan as a rookie come in and play the Knicks in October, and we just went bananas. I remember being underneath the basket watching the warm-ups, and Jordan was throwing some funky dunks down, and the guy got the public address announcer got on the loudspeaker and said, "Will everyone behind the basket please go back to their seats?" And Al, I will never, ever, ever forget that. So it felt really cool being in New York City in the 80s and the 90s because I got a chance to see Jordan his first two games at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, man, I'm so jealous, Steve. You know, I talked to some of my family members that got the opportunity to watch him play in person, and they describe it like, you know, it was like seeing the Pope or something like that. There's a certain aura that comes with seeing MJ, right?
And now when you say that, okay, the kids can watch him on YouTube today like most of us are doing. The kids watch The Last Dance, which most of us are doing. Al, unless you saw him in person, you felt him. If you watch him now, you know, you can see him. But Al, seeing him in person, whether it was at the Palace, whether it was in Chicago, whether it was at Madison Square Garden, you felt Michael Jordan's, you know, appearance, you know. So that those kinds of feelings, emotions will never escape you.
Steve, what was it? When you did see him first play in person, what was it about Mike where you said, okay, this dude is unlike anything I've seen. He's just different. What was it for you, Steve?
Oh, that's easy. It was his intensity. He'd come out on the court. I remember warm-ups. I remember like it was yesterday, and I'm not making this up. I remember. You know, he came out. He was going hard. You know, I heard Jeff Van Gundy talk about today's players when they warm up. They goof around. They joke around. You know, coming out before the third quarter. You know, guys, if next time you watch Michigan State, watch them warm up, you know, before and at halftime. Jordan always went hard. I remember that. And I'll tell you what, Al, talk about what separated him. I was reading about Prince, the musician, the late musician last night. I was reading some stories about him.
Right to be, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I read a quote from Jimmy Jam. Everybody knows who Jimmy Jam is if you're familiar with music. He had a quote on Prince. He said, he was always driven. Everything that drove him was the music. His work ethic was beyond everyone else's. He outworked you. Now, right away, I thought of Michael Jordan. Jordan was driven. He outworked you, and he just had so much intensity. So I would have to say intensity, Al, was the first thing that I noticed.
I love that, man. I love that. You know, in watching this Last Dance docuseries, you know, the statement that I've made over and over and over throughout these past 5 weeks has been, look, I don't care what you do. I don't care what your profession is, you know, whether you're a manager of a restaurant, whether you're over there bagging groceries, whether you're, you know, a mechanic. Anybody can take away something when you look at Michael Jordan's drive and will to win, right? And that's something that I'm pretty sure you drew a lot of that from watching this docuseries, right?
Al, I took notes, pages. I must have 12 to 13 pages of notes on all 10 episodes. And the things that are coming up on my papers when I reread them, it's the same fundamentals, the same traits that we need in sports that you need in everyday life. Because, Al, I'll tell you, I don't want to sound preachy and sound like a motivational speaker, but everything that Jordan does in terms of being the best, you know, like you said, the restaurant owner, the CEO, the busboy at the restaurant, every little thing, Al, it takes those traits. So if you're driven and you know, you get up every morning, you go to work, you put everything into what you're doing. I tell you, Al, real quick, they talked about mindfulness. And I think everyone out there listening should look up mindfulness. If you're feeling you're going through some kind of rut, you're looking for a change. But ever since I started studying mindfulness 3 years ago, my life has changed, Al. Mindfulness is being in the present. And they talked about in the documentary, they said the greatest thing about Michael Jordan wasn't so much his talent and his athletic ability, but it was his ability to stay in the moment. Michael never cared about the past. He never cared about the future. If you remember that last scene when he was playing the piano, how about that, Al? He had a piano in his hotel room, and he was playing the piano. Someone asked him, hey, Michael, you coming back for the seventh next year? He says, listen, man. He goes, I want to, you know, preach the Phil Jackson Zen Buddhist stuff. I'm staying in the moment. So, Al, if we can stay in the moment, especially on the basketball court, I think things will work out.
Oh, that is so true. I'm so glad you brought that up, Steven. And how great of a moment was that? I mean, look, we're talking about Michael Jeffrey Jordan and the Chicago Bulls winning championship number 8. And look, they could have gone anywhere. They probably could have rented out a club and partied it up, honeys everywhere. They go to the hotel and just hang out, Michael on a piano, and run up and down the hallways like they're little kids. You got to love that, right?
Speaking of that, I'm glad you brought that up because I remember reading an outstanding book by David Halberstam called Playing for Keeps. And Al, if anyone ever wants to read some good books, Playing for Keeps and The Life by Roland Lazenby are two great books. In the book, Halberstam wrote, the day the Chicago Bulls had their little get-together in that big park in Chicago, after they won their 6th finals, later that night, Al, they had a party at Michael Jordan's restaurant for just players, families, coaches, and wives. And it saddened me to read the only Bull that did not show up that night was Dennis Rodman.
Wow.
Yeah, but I mean, I wasn't surprised by it after I saw the documentary, but well, at the time I read it before the documentary, I said, why didn't Rodman show up to that party? So when the writer wrote that, I looked and I put it together. I said, yeah, I could see him doing stuff. You know, the trip to Vegas, you know, going out to the wrestling thing. But how many coaches would have put up with that? And how many coaches would have suspended him for a game?
Oh, and that's where I'm going next. And to your point about Rodman, like you said, I mean, Rodman was a different guy. He loved that nightlife scene. Yes. It's like he craved it. He needed it. And if you watch, you know, it's almost like, I don't know about you, Steve, man, but watching the Last Dance docuseries, I had to kind of take a step back and say to myself, you know what? These latest basketball docs that have come out in these recent years, they kind of feel like an Avengers movie. Like you have to watch one before you watch the other. And I encourage people, I know you've seen them already, but I would encourage people, if you haven't seen The Last Dance, first off, where have you been? But you got to watch the Detroit Pistons Bad Boys documentary and also the Dennis Rodman documentary to fully get, you know, a good grasp of what you'll see in The Last Dance. Am I right, Steve, when I say that?
Absolutely, 100%. Al, I'm telling you, anyone who's listening, anyone you know, if they coach or if they teach, even if they're a parent, I really think there are bits and pieces and even full episodes that we can show to our younger generation, and we can get some stories, some really inspirational, motivational, you know, things that happen that we can learn from, because that's what history is all about, to learn. You know, Al, you go to college to find success. So if you can take these examples and implement them in your life. Al, when you talk about Dennis Rodman, I mean, here's a guy, 99% of the people don't know this, he never played high school basketball, never played a single minute. So here's a guy who's one of the greatest rebounders and defenders of all time. He's in the Basketball Hall of Fame. He's got 5 championship rings. Did he have a dark side, a deviant side? Of course he did. But you know what? Phil Jackson and Chuck Daly did tremendous jobs with him. It seems like Rodman's doing okay today. So like I said, Al, watch this series, and I think you can learn a lot from it.
You can certainly learn a lot from it. Again, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are talking with basketball aficionado, the great Steve Finnemore, former coach of the East Lansing and Lansing Sexton boys basketball teams. From a coaching perspective, Steve, you just mentioned the great Phil Jackson. And as I watched this docuseries, I found myself even garnering a greater appreciation for the great Phil Jackson and the job that he was able to do with that Chicago Bulls team in the 90s. There's so much that he personally had to juggle as a coach, dealing with the ego of Jerry Krause, dealing with all of the big personalities on that basketball team. I loved how they talked about his basketball history as a head coach. He was more than a coach. He was, a spiritual advisor as well. The reason why him and Dennis Rodman bonded so well is because, first off, Phil had a little bit of Dennis in him back in the day. And their Native American, their fascination of Native American culture also helped bond them as well. Looking at Phil Jackson throughout this docuseries, what were some of your biggest takeaways as a fellow coach, Steve?
Al, I am so glad you brought up Phil Jackson because, number one, he's my favorite coach of all time. I've studied him for many, many years. I've read many of his books. And another book recommendation, Sacred Hoops, okay, is one of the greatest books I've ever read. The one thing about Phil Jackson, and I'll say this right now, he's, to me, he's the greatest ever in any sport. Because here's why, Al. Not only did he win 11 championships as a coach, he won two as a player, but he won a championship in the CBA. Now, the CBA is equivalent to today's G League, so think about that. And he coached a team and won the championship in that CBA. He didn't have Jordan. He didn't have Kobe Bryant. So I tell everyone all the attributes that he had as a coach is what everyone is looking for today in a coach, like these parents, these administrators at the high school level, these athletic directors in college, even in the NBA, the general managers. They want guys that are going to come in and coach this team and really, really support them, you know, be positive with them, you know, don't talk down to them, you know, bring them along, all those little traits that you hear, you know. A lot of coaches give up. They give up on players. They give up on losing. Phil Jackson fought his way through this industry, the coaching industry, paid his dues. He was an assistant coach under Doug Collins. So he did a lot of work, the dirty work, and he turned out to be a fantastic coach. And he was so perfect for Michael, Kobe, Shaq, Pippen, and Dennis Rodman. So please do some research on Phil Jackson. He's one of the greatest of all time.
Is there anyone in the game today, coaching the game of basketball today in the NBA, Steve, that reminds you at all of Phil? Is there any coach that comes close today, Steve?
Absolutely. The first name that comes to mind is Brad Stevens of the Boston Celtics. Mm-hmm. Brad Stevens has the temperament of Phil Jackson. And I think he talks to his players on and off the court like Jackson normally did. I would say Greg Popovich, but I think, you know, I can see it. I can see the similarities. But Popovich was more of an X's and O's guy. I know Phil Jackson had the triangle that he got from Tex Winner. But I would say Popovich right now and Brad Stevens. A lot of guys try to be like Phil Jackson, like Nick Nurse of the Toronto Raptors. I saw a nice interview with Nick Nurse, and he talked about how Phil Jackson's been a big influence. Hey, Al, I'll tell you what. I've read some stuff. There's a lot of people that connect with Phil Jackson right now as we speak via email, via text, on the phone. Steve Kerr's another guy. He's a in-the-moment guy. So there are guys who reach out to Phil Jackson. It's sad that his executive career didn't work out with the Knicks a couple of years ago, but to me, he'll always be the greatest coach in all of sports.
Preach on, man. Phil is a living legend, Steve.
Oh, the best. The best.
The best, dude. All right, I want to talk about the aspect of, and we briefly touched on it, but I want to really dive into it now. The aspect of this docuseries being made available here in 2020 and young athletes everywhere, specifically young basketball players everywhere, watching Michael Jordan needle his teammates and push them to a level where they achieved 6 rings. Now, a lot of people are, you're going to have some people that look at that, and I think the majority of people look at that, you know, Michael going at his teammates, the trash talking, there was a reason behind it. A lot of people look at that, the majority of people look at that and say, I get what Michael was doing. There may be some out there that say, okay, maybe that's a little too far. What say you about what you saw in that docuseries concerning Michael Jeffrey Jordan?
Well, here's the deal, Al. When you start discussing situations that affect people emotionally and mentally, you're always going to have two sides of the coin. You're always going to have people on one side, people on the other, that agree and disagree. We're seeing it now in our country and politics, okay? Mm-hmm. It happens. You know, people like chocolate ice cream. Some people like vanilla ice cream. It all depends on the person you're dealing with and how they were raised and brought up. All you had to do, I forget which episode it was, but if you remember the part with Kobe Bryant, when they talked about Kobe being like Mike, and I think Kobe said, and I could be saying this wrong, but Kobe did say, what you get from me is from Michael. He goes, I don't get 5 championships without Michael Jordan. He guided me so much. He gave me so much advice. Let's face it, even down to the fallaway jump shot, Kobe patterned his game and his life and his drive after Michael Jordan. Now Horace Grant just came out and started, you know, criticizing Jordan. Craig Hodges criticized him. Scott Burrell had a great interview yesterday. He said, I love to be pushed. I loved when Michael got on me. You know, Jordan pushed his teammates out. People don't like to be pushed, especially in today's culture, in today's society, Al. People are so, you know, I'm going to do things my way, leave me alone, blah, blah, blah. Let me tell you, Al, everybody needs a kick in the backside. Everybody needs a push. I call it, Al, a positive push as opposed to a negative shove. You know, we're always pushing people, push, push, push. You got to be careful how you do it today. I get it. But listen, Michael just wanted the best. He wanted to test your commitment. He wanted to test how much you were really, really down with his program. And let's face it, it worked. It worked. I mean, they won 6 championships. It's not like they were losing, losing, losing. So, you know, Al, every now and then someone needs to be pushed to bring out the best. I remember an old coach telling me, hey, Steve, when the coach stops yelling at you, then that's when you should be worried, because then he doesn't really give really cares about you. So I think it's okay. I think we need to toughen up a little bit. Diana Taurasi the other day said, you know, tough love is something that everybody needs. So, but Al, in today's society, and I don't mean this as a bad thing, in today's society, Al, everyone is being nice to everyone. You know, give him a trophy, give him a juice box, pat him on the back, tell him he did a good job. Al, sometimes a kid didn't do a good job, and you got to tell him the truth. So, you know, during the pandemic, during this coronavirus, I know it's difficult. Everyone's trying to be nice, but hey, sometimes you gotta push people to see how much they're committed.
Preach on, Steve. So well said. Because you know, I've been having. I think you know, after episode 7, as I stated on Monday, was my favorite part of the episode because it was the first time that we saw Michael open up and explain why he was so hard on his teammates, why he needled them and pushed them. It was all about what you just stated, Steve. It was about knowing that, okay, if you can take this from me in practice, when that moment comes, when you're alongside of me in battle, when we and the game is on the line and I really need to trust you, I know I can depend on you. If you can deal with it for me here in practice, then I know you can handle it when the big moment comes. And you know, and you shared that quote with Scott Burrell from that interview yesterday via text. And I got goosebumps just reading it because that's what it's all about. But it's such, you know, it's such a delicate balance today, Steve, because like you said, it's really annoying for me today because I feel like we are living in such a soft society from the standpoint, we love to hear what we're doing well. We hate to hear what we're doing wrong. And it's the thing that it's the latter that is going to help us improve, but we don't like to hear that. Right. And if you want to be good, if you want to be, excuse me, let me revise that. If you want to be great or exceptional at something, you can't have people telling you how good you are all the time, right?
Al, I'll tell you right now, I don't talk about this very much. It's in the rearview mirror. I've been trying to let it go. My time at East Lansing High School as boys varsity coach for 8 years was wonderful 8 years of my life. I learned so much. But it got to a point where I had to compromise certain things that I believed in because of the softness in some of the players. And when that starts happening, you know, then you run into troubles. Al, we were 15-2 when I resigned. Okay. We were 67-4 over 3 years. You know, we had success. So sometimes when you push someone, you know, they're going to be resistant. They're going to press back and they're not going to like it. So, then that goes into the mental part of the game. You know, they'll always say the bad things about people, coaches, teammates, teachers, players, you know, whatever, ex-wives, ex-husbands. They'll always say the bad things. but Al, they will never tell you all the good things those people do. Like Michael Jordan, okay, he's done so many great things for teammates, for people. You know, they showed the signs that everybody likes. You know, they showed and I don't think it was bullying what he did to Jerry Krause. I think it was more bantering. I think there's a difference when you banter with someone, you know. So when Jordan, you know, when he told him, hey, you know, what are you taking, diet pills? Hey, we better raise the rims if you want to take layups with us, you know. Some of that stuff, like what Scott Burrell said yesterday, was bantering, Al. So I think we need to get tougher. We need to get thicker skin. We need to take coaching. I tell you what, Al, I know it's a different topic, but I feel bad for today's teachers in society and in the school systems, because they're getting hit left and right by not only the students, but the parents.
All right, what I want to do is hit our first break, and when we come back, we'll continue this chat with Steve Finnemore as we further dive into his takeaways and thoughts on The Last Dance, Chicago Bulls Michael Jordan docuseries. We'll be right back. You are listening to the Wednesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We have a special guest with us today, the great Steve Finnemore, basketball aficionado, and we are talking The Last Dance with Steve and getting his thoughts and takeaways on that docuseries. So Steve, I want to ask you this. When it was all said and done on Sunday night and you sat back on your couch, what were the thoughts running through your head about what you just saw?
I have to be honest. I've watched it twice now. And the first time, I was so glued and focused to what they were saying at the end. I tried to wrap, you know, my arms around it, and I was so grateful. And I tell you what, Al, I almost shed a tear because it really reminded me of how much, number one, I miss basketball now, mm-hmm. and number two, how I missed it back in the day. Because, Al, I'll tell you, we will never have a decade like the 1980s and the 1990s ever again in basketball. And I shed a tear because I really missed it. And I'm so happy that Jason Hare directed this documentary because I think he did a tremendous job. So probably the missing of the game, Al, that's what I really, really came away with. And you know what? it's made me, these 10 episodes have made me a better person, more focused, and a harder worker in everything I do, because I really think, Al, you got to give up something in your life, no matter how old you are, 20s, 50s, you got to give something up if you really want to be great at it, you know? So everybody says, yeah, coach, I want to be a better player. Can you work me out? Do you really, really want to be a better player? Do you want to work as hard as Michael Jordan? You know, if you're coming up in your business broadcasting, do you work as hard as Al Martin? You know, do you work as hard as Stephen A. Smith? You know, it's all about the work and showing up, Al. So those are probably the two things I came away with this docuseries.
Work ethic is everything. You heard it right there from the mouth of Steve Finnemore. Steve, before I get you out of here, man, I want to also ask you this. There were so many personalities and basketball personnel that were featured in this docuseries. There were some great, great characters, some great, great stories. I got a two-parter for you. What was your favorite story profiled in the documentary and your favorite interviewee in the documentary?
You know, I loved every time they talked to Dennis Rodman. Every single time he was sitting down with those sunglasses on. And the best thing that he said was when Michael made that shot against the Utah Jazz in you know, the last game in 98 when he stole a ball from Carmelo, which we didn't really talk about, Al. We talked about it off the air. Michael Jordan stole that ball after he made that layup, so that was a huge possession. And then when they interviewed Dennis about, hey, what did you think? What did you, you know, see when Michael was coming up the floor? And Dennis used some salty language about, you know, getting out of the way, and he was going to shoot the you-know-what. And so I think the Dennis Rodman interview was great. All the interviews they did with him, I loved in the beginning, the first two episodes when they went really deep with him. And I'll tell you what, Al, Matt Stenginger, who's very, very popular in these parts around the mid-Michigan area, Matt Stenginger, who played at Michigan State back in the day, everyone knows who he is. He does color analysis for Michigan State basketball. He won a ring in 1997 with Michigan, the Chicago Bulls. And he only played 12 minutes. And that was a great story. But they never touched on that. And I wish they would have. And you know, other than that, Al, it was just the overall. And I'm glad people saw how great Scottie Pippen was. I don't care what anyone says. I'll argue, discuss, talk about Scottie Pippen's greatness over his career. But you know what, Al? Like I said before, he'll always be thought about not going in the game with 1.8 seconds left and throwing the chair onto the court and being, you know, holding out, you know, and not getting the surgery. So those probably three things, Al, I came away with.
Yeah, you know, Scottie has been quoted as saying that, you know, he's not really happy with how he believes the docuseries has portrayed him. But all of those moments did happen, though, right? You know?
Yeah, but Al, see, it goes back to my point earlier. They'll always remember the bad things you do. They'll always talk about, you know, he didn't want to go in the game. He threw a chair on the court. You know, he didn't want to get the surgery. Michael said he was selfish, you know? But they'll never tell you the great things that Scottie Pippen did on the court, like guarding Mark Jackson in the playoffs, guarding Patrick Ewing in the playoffs, you know, rebounding, passing the ball, running the floor and finishing. Scottie Pippen was a heck of a basketball player during those years with the Chicago Bulls. So, Al, like I said, in life, it's always the bad things you do that everyone, or the negative things that you do that people will remember and talk about.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is so true, especially here in 2020. Was there anybody else that you thought, oh, man, I wish they would have talked to fill in the blank? Is there anybody, when you really think about it, you think back at it, Steve, that you wish you would have heard from?
Well, you know, at first, but I got to finish this up, though, because at first, Juanita Jordan, his ex-wife, but then later on, a couple of days later, after listening to my wife, I'm glad they didn't talk to Juanita Jordan for her privacy. You know, I thought they were going to talk to her. You know what I was disappointed in a little bit? I thought they should have had some more conversations with the children, his two sons and his daughter. I wish they would have talked to them. They talked to them a couple of times. And then I know they talked to Tony Kukoc, but I think they would have went, I wish they would have went deeper with Tony Kukoc, because, you know, he was a big part of those three championships. So probably those two. I fall off on the wife. I say, okay, let's not talk to her, but maybe Tony Kukoc and the children, Al.
Yeah, and we did see Jasmine, Margus, and Jeffrey in that final episode, but it was only for a brief moment.
Right.
All
right.
Steve, this has been awesome, man. We could have done like a 3-hour show just on this topic alone. And before I go, I do want to wish you and your family and friends well during this wild, wild time. I know you're staying busy, man, and keeping the hoops alive with the quarantine crossovers, right? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, man. I've been out there just trying to work on my handle a little bit. You know what? Not to be preachy or motivational, you know, driven. You just gotta stay active, do some reading. You know, your listeners, they gotta stay positive because that's the most important thing. You could talk about the coronavirus, you could talk about it all you want, runny nose, you know, headaches and things like that. But it's all about the mental health now, Al. We're 10 weeks into this stay at home order. So if everyone can do their best, Al, to stay mentally focused and stay positive, things are gonna work out. I think we're gonna be okay.
You know, and that's why I love having you on, Steve, because it's bigger than sports whenever we do have you on when we talk, because I love when you talk about the mental. It's so important. If you're going to be successful in anything in life, you got to make sure that muscle between the ears is A1, right?
Hey, Al, you know what? When a kid falls down after going for a layup and the trainer comes running on the court, are you okay, Al? Are you okay? Where does it hurt? Blah, blah, blah. Is it your ankle? Is it your knee? Al, when someone's struggling, they lose a job, they lose a family member, they lose a friend. No one ever comes to their rescue. No one says, hey, Al, are you doing okay, man? You're going to be all right, you know? It's like when coaches get fired, Al. When coaches get fired, no one ever calls them to say, hey, are you doing okay? But when coaches get hired, they got 100 voicemails on their phone looking for jobs.
Oh, that's so true. So true.
Nobody cares anymore. You got to worry about the mental health of your friends and family.
Oh, that is so true. That is some food for thought. I think everybody needs to meditate on that point right there, Steve.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. The great Steve Finnemore. Steve, it has been a pleasure, my man. We got to have you back on soon, all right?
Anytime you want. You're the best. I love talking sports and life with the great Al Martin. Everybody versus Detroit, right? Detroit versus everybody, right?
Detroit versus everybody, baby. Appreciate it, Steve. You the man.
Okay, man. You have a great day, Al.
All right. You do the same, Steve. Thank you, man. He's the best, isn't he? All right. Let's hit our final break. When we come back, I'll have a brief wrap-up of today's show. Don't go anywhere. All right, ladies and gents, that is going to do it for this Wednesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Thanks so much to the great Steve Finnemore for rocking it out with me today. Was that conversation fire or what? All right, folks, we'll see you tomorrow. Until then, be smart, be safe, and as always, be easy, people.